Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
How's the water, George?
Hot, flat, and unforgettable, but wet.
Well, bear with it, folks, bear with it. 6 months' time, I'll be drinking chocolate ice cream sodas.
Homo sapiens. What an inventive, invincible species. It's only a few million years since they crawled up out of the mud and began to walk. Puny, defenseless bipeds. They've survived flood, famine, and plague. They've survived cosmic wars and holocausts. Now, here they are, out among the stars, to begin a new life, ready to outsit eternity. They're indomitable.
Lie down in the sun. Young Mr. Baines would have us give in to death while there is still life. He'd end the rules. Throw away the regulations. No more standing in line for water. We let the strong take away from the weak. And no more food rationing. Let the young steal from the old. And when that ship does arrive, it won't find a society. Just a pack. Not one being left alive. Only animal.
We don't have to worry about nothing. We burn in one hell of a something. They're gonna see us from out of space, light it up, like we're the size of the human race, when the lights turn down, they don't know what they heard, like the marsh playing down, giving love to the world, we'll be raising our hands. Gonna let it burn, 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 burn. We gonna let it burn, 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 burn. Gonna let it burn, 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 burn. We gonna let it burn, 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 burn.
Tell us about the Earth.
Do that, Captain, would you? Tell us about the Earth as you remember it.
Again, Jerry? All right, I'll talk about it.
Fran, you and Hank fill in any holes I leave if I'm wrong about any of my recollections. Correct me.
Jojo, I was just a boy when we arrived here. I was 15 years old when I was here. I remember it as a place of color. I remember, Jojo, that in the autumn, Jojo, in the autumn, the leaves change, turn different color, red, orange, gold.
And I remember streams of water that flowed down hillsides, and the water was sparkling and clear.
Look now, it's all around. There's no sign of life. Voices, there's not a sound. Can you hear me now? This is planet.
Bye. You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Well, good afternoon, folks. Yes, it is Talking Twilight Zone, our second show of the new year. And I'm here today with my wonderful co-hosts, Robert, Bobby, and Dave. And we have our guests, Felix and Lou. Hello, guys. Lou and Felix just came in. Okay, well, it is the new year, and so far it's off to a decent start. A little cold here, but, you know, that will end soon, hopefully, and spring will be abound, I hope. So,
yes,
everybody...
I remember how hot it used to be. The nice summer breezes, the 95-degree temperatures.
Flowers blooming, yes, the good old days. God, I'm praying for a very quick spring, very early spring.
Yeah, but you're not the only one. So.
I think we all are. Had enough of snow and everything. But
today, I wanted to dedicate today's show to the passing of Russell Johnson, who was on Twilight Zone episodes back there in Executions.
Yes, we lost our professor. And he lived a good life, 89 years. He was living on Bainbridge Island in Washington, and he had a pretty good life, very fulfilling life. And as a matter of fact, I read an article. He was just giving out autographs about a month ago. He was meeting with people and giving autographs. Supposedly a very nice man. So, sorry to see him go. Also lost Dave Madden this week. If people remember the Partridge Family. He played the manager.
The manager,
Yeah, Russell Kincaid.
Yeah. Reuben Kincaid, yeah.
Reuben Kincaid, that's right.
Yep. That's right. And, we lost a couple of goodies. I don't know if anybody also heard that last week, we lost Phil Everly of the Everly Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was sad. But, okay, well, anyway, on a brighter note, we are doing, today we're doing the episode on Thursday, We Leave for Home. And I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
This is William Benteen, who officiates in a disintegrating outpost in space. The people who are a remnant society, who left the Earth looking for a millennium. A place without war, without jeopardy, without fear. And what they found was a lonely, barren place whose only industry was survival. And this is what they've done for 3 decades, survive. And the memory of the Earth they came from has become an indistinct and shadowed recollection of another time. And another place. 1 month ago, a signal from Earth announced that a ship would be coming to pick them up and take them home. In just a moment, we'll hear more of that ship. More of that home and what it takes out of mind and body to reach it. This is the Twilight Zone.
Yes, indeed. And on Thursday, We Leave for Home starred James Whitmore. And actually, a pretty intriguing episode. In 1991, an expedition to the hellish desert planet V9 Gamma was stranded, and the people had no choice but to begin their own small settlement there. So for 30 years, the group's leader, Captain Benteen, he's maintained a totalitarian grip upon the group. He believes this strict discipline prevents them from giving up hope in the harsh, unyielding environment. So when a rescue mission from Earth finally arrives, Benteen is the first as jubilant as the others. I mean, he's thrilled to death to be going back to Earth. But then he begins to raise objections because he's losing control over the group because the leader of the rescue team is sort of undermining his authority. And Benteen suddenly realizes that the colonists, they don't want to stay in a group when they return to Earth. They want to go off on their own and do their own thing. They have minds of their own. So he tries to persuade them to stay on the planet instead of going back to Earth. Well, everyone chooses to return home, of course. Well, Benteen announces he's going to remain behind if he must. So on the day the people board the ship, the rescue mission's Colonel Sloan and Captain Benteen's second-in-command, Al Baines, they search for Benteen to give him one last chance to change his mind and go with them. But he's nowhere to be found. So after they give up and leave, Benteen emerges from the top of the cave where he had sheltered those people. And as the ship prepares to take off, Benteen starts talking to the people as if they're still there. Then all of a sudden, he starts remembering the beauty of Earth, and he realizes he's alone, and now he wants to go home. So he rushes out, screaming for the ship to come back, but it's too late. It's gone. And he's now stranded on V9 Gamma for the rest of his life, completely alone in the barren, lifeless desert planet. Whoa. Well, this is another story of a man who wanted to be a god. And we saw that in a previous episode, The Little People, where you had two men on a planet, and one finds this little society of little teeny tiny people, and he just decides that he wants to, take over. He just wants to stay on the planet because he wants to be a god to all of those people. He wants to be the be-all of those people. And he ends up being alone on the planet and actually ends up dying when some people from another planet kill him. But this is sort of the same type of story, except they're not little people. These are, life human people like Benteen. And, he was the leader of this group. And they remained there for 30 years. And he wasn't only their leader. I mean, he was like a father, a brother, a doctor, a psychologist. He told tales. He was just about everything in the world to them, and he knew that. And these people, his people, as he felt they were, they worshipped him. And they believed that they couldn't exist without him. And he led them to believe this. And this isolated planet, it wasn't a pleasant-looking place. I mean, it was very desolate, very depressing. And they have to deal with two suns. And, Lou, I think I'm getting a little noise on your end, so I'm going to mute you for a few minutes.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. So, they have to deal with two suns that never set and these horrible surprise meteor showers. And, it's no wonder these folks are depressed. And anyone would hate it there. It's a horrible place. And, Benteen, he tries to soothe their low morale by telling them one story after another about life on Earth as he remembers it. But that kind of crap only works for so long. I mean, those people were really feeling low. They were down in dumps. And I don't know how they got there, but someone on that mission screwed up royally. Benteen is such a power-hungry control freak that when a ship finally does arrive to rescue them, he immediately locks horns with the colonel, who desperately wants to help the people. I mean, you wouldn't think that a man who's been stuck on this horrible planet for 30 years would just carry on the way he did. You'd think he would shut his mouth and just go with the flow. I mean, you think he would want to go home. No. Benteen was not about to have the authority that he had, worked so hard to build, undermined, and taken away from him. So he fights Sloan every step of the way, and Sloan immediately knew that Benteen was not good for those people. I mean, let's face it, he got downright scary. But that's okay, because the Twilight Zone needs scary people. We all know that. But I just know that I wouldn't want him running my life. And that's exactly what he tried to do with those people. And he described them to Sloan as children, all of them as children who would die without him. I mean, come on, it's just one sick puppy. He completely lost his grip on reality. It was obvious that he needed the colony more than they needed him, because he needed the power and control. But all good things must come to an end, or all bad things, if you ask his followers. And in a zone-like turn of events, the colony no longer wanted to remain loyal to him. They want to control their own lives, their own futures. They turn their backs on him, and they leave him to perish all alone in that vast nothingness of a planet. I mean, Benteen quickly starts to lose his mind, but I think that was happening gradually all along. It was a very good ending. that really grips the viewer. While I have to admit, I felt a little sorry for Benteen, but, you know, I also couldn't help thinking, though, that he got what he deserved. No good ever comes to a person who abuses their power. I think we all know that. And obviously, you know, that was Rod's moral to the story. If you're going to try to control everyone around you, you'll eventually end up alone. And guess what prop we got to see for the umpteenth time? The spaceship from Forbidden Planet. And also the shots of the rescue ship descending and ascending, they were taken from the episode Death Ship, which we recently reviewed. But, you know, I thought James Whitmore gave a very impressive performance. I call it one of the best performances of the entire series. And he was convincing as the leader who, you know, he most likely kept those people alive through his will and determination, but it eventually, you know, got to be a little much. And it was a stellar performance by him. And I remember another role in which Whitmore was a standout, and that was his role as the prison librarian in the outstanding film The Shawshank Redemption. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he came to a sad end in that, too. And Tim O'Connor was great as Sloane, who tried to deal with Benteen. Like Whitmore, this was Connor's only Twilight Zone appearance. Little boy Jojo was played by Daniel Kulick, who was director Buzz Kulick's son. So, wonder how he got the role, huh? And James Broderick played Benteen's closest friend, Al, and he's the father of actor Matthew Broderick. And he went on to star in the 1970s hit series Family. So, you know, this episode was tragic, powerful, moving. It had some amazing acting, and in some ways it reminded me of season one's The Lonely as well. You know, about one man sentenced to live alone on a desolate planet and gets the female robot. But the planet this episode's people live on was almost about the same. But they still had each other for company, you know, and the guy in The Lonely didn't. So in the end, Benteen would be in the same position as Corey from The Lonely, except there would be no robotic company this time. So I'm going to rate this a 4.5. I thought it was a really outstanding episode. one of season 4's best eps and one of the most memorable of the series with one of the most memorable performances. So with that, I'm going to send it over to Robert.
Lynn, I wanted to ask you before I go on here, don't planets have dark sides? Where it doesn't face the sun? Just kind of curious.
They're supposed to.
They did have two suns, but they were very near together. If they would have been more spaced apart, you would have thought they would have only had a very short night. But because we don't know whether, because there are two stars, it's affected the rotation of the planet. So it always keeps the same face facing forward.
They were close together. They were like right. They were right next to each other.
So, therefore, they would have effect to slow the rotation down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. When they crashed, why didn't they send a party to go on the other side of the planet to see if it would be more cooler and do that instead of just staying on the side where the two suns are facing? That kind of puzzled me.
It didn't look as though they had any transport to travel 12,000 miles to the other side of a planet.
That's true.
They crashed the plane. If they crashed the spaceship,
that's true. It would have been a good, that would have been a good thing though if they could have got over to the other side.
Well, fortunately, when I did this review, I was kind of the Bobby of the group. No offense, there, Bobby.
No, that's a real compliment to me.
But actually, I did change my mind a little bit, so after re-reviewing it, and I felt I was a little harsh on this episode, but still, I'm not into character building pieces, and this is basically what this was a character building piece. Characters in search of an exit. You know,
so it was a character assassination myself, but there you go.
I know. But you know, I like the special effects, and you could tell the background was a painting or matting of the of the planet itself.
Yeah. The meteor shower.
How can you possibly like the special effects? You mean to tell me you can have a meteor storm or whatever that was, and they all managed to run in and nothing hits anybody? How do you do that?
Yeah, but it was a meteor shower.
One had a broken arm.
Where the styrofoam rocks, you know, they're kind of hard to really direct.
Somebody should have been hit by something.
One did. He had a broken arm.
Oh, yeah, that's right. One of them got a broken arm.
I suppose.
We got one injury.
But I think they just had people throwing styrofoam rocks at them and they just had to fix them later. But, I can't understand what Ben Teen, what he was thinking when he decided to stay behind. I mean, how stupid can you be having the all or nothing attitude that he had? But I guess the dilution that he had, you know, of control, he didn't want to let go of, and that was kind of his downfall at the end. I mean, man, you know, if he would have thought more about it, well, you know, he did, but it kind of came too late. You know, he could have gone back on Earth on a lecture circuit making money or, you know, whatever passed off as currency then, because, you know, a lot of people, when they go on expeditions and stuff like that, they always get on the circuit tour and talk about their experience and stuff like that.
Yeah, and this happened in, supposedly it happened in 91 when they got stranded, and it was 30 years later. So it was supposedly 2000.
I guess it was supposed to be from the 1974 Holocaust.
So. That's right. It was supposed to be 2021, my God. But I have a question for you, Robert. How did they eat? What were they eating if it was a desert planet for 30 years?
Russians. You said Russians.
Bread rocks, probably. They're tasty, just like hardtack back in the 1800s.
Oh, my God. I always wondered about the food situation.
I think there's a slight biblical reference here with him leading his people through the desert, so perhaps they were eating manna from heaven.
That's true.
Yeah, he couldn't go back to Earth, so he had to stay behind for his sins. Yeah,
land of milk and honey, right?
That's not the only hole in this story. There's lots of them. I'll get into it when it's my turn. I'll try to out Bobby Robert.
Well, you know, you know, just a lonely man talking to the rocks, unfortunately, when he. But, of course, we've heard this, you know, story years later. You know, Star Trek, Doctor Who, Lost in Space, Lost. A movie I was reminded of was Robinson Crusoe on Mars. It came out in 1964. And it had Adam West. And Paul Manti, he died a couple years ago. The guy that played the character, Robinson Crusoe, so to say, on the. I was also reminding myself of a Doctor Who episode. And I don't know, Dave, what do you think I'm thinking of on Doctor Who, especially the Fifth Doctor, what episode or story?
Well, the Fifth Doctor, I've got a couple of clips of the Tenth Doctor in Gridlock, but I don't know which one you're thinking about.
Frontier.
Frontier. All right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about that meteor storm that they went through, and the one on that one about the Troctators. So I'm going to go ahead and throw a trailer for that and a clip afterwards for Frontiers.
We're being dragged towards the planet.
I should be able to resist this one.
Sucked into the earth in front of my eyes. The TARDIS has been destroyed.
Frontios buries its own dead.
Help me!
Something going on here, isn't there?
I know what they are! Troctators!
We have been marooned on Frontios for 500 years.
They've had an invention! They are the appetite beneath the ground!
I think your colony of Earth people is in grave extinction.
Troctators need living flesh.
You will never leave Frontios now!
No!
Doctor, can't we continue this conversation undercover?
Yes, indeed. Time.
This bombardment could be a tactical diversion on the part of the Doctor.
No, I think not, Brazen.
But he has some connection with these attacks.
Careful.
Gently with that now. Gently.
Swift exit. We've had enough of this planet.
You hurt?
It's getting lighter.
The attack's nearly over. Let's get out of here. Come on, the TARDIS.
Well, anyway, it's about a human colony that get bombarded by meteors as well, but is it a natural occurrence or an outside influence in that story? So, the doctor and artist crew in that one. Also, they brought up Frontier in Space. That's also about an Earth colony as well. And what was happening to them, and we get the what was the character that the Master was portraying in that, Dave?
Oh, crikey. I'll have to think now.
Is it the Inquisitor or something like that, or?
Ah, that sounds
close enough. Yeah. But both of them very interesting stories to check out on the Third Doctor, John Pertwee, Fifth Doctor, Peter Davison, but...
Yeah, you're correct. Yeah.
It is? Okay.
No. I thought I'd heard you say Frontier in Space, but it is the front... That's why I put the first one in. It is the Frontierist with the Fifth Doctor, yeah.
But, like I said before, I kind of changed my... rating after re-reviewing it, and actually it's better on review for me. It was, I moved it to a only a half a point, though. I thought still it's an average score. I give it a 2 out of 5. I originally gave it a 1.5 out of 5, so I felt it did. It's no classic, and you know, it's barely makes it up to a 2 for me.
What did you think of Whitmore's performance, though?
I mean, I like James Whitmore. I've seen him in Westerns, and mm-hmm. I've seen him in other stuff over the years. Like I said, it's just a character piece. Not I like more action, Twilight Zone-y stuff going on, and I just felt that this kind of lacked it.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I felt the first time looking at it, and I know that some plot holes will probably be brought up as we go on with this. I wasn't too crazy about it.
Felix thought it was one of the best of season 4. He gave it a 4.5.
I mean, yeah, it's better compared to other things that we saw.
Agreed, yeah.
Besides Printer's Devil and... you know, the new exhibit, probably a lot better. But, yeah, this one just was average.
Yeah.
So, go ahead and pass it over to Bobby.
Excuse me. Well, as is well known, the Twilight Zone in its original run was sponsored mainly by cigarettes, as most series were back then. And Rod Serling did his best to help them out by smoking constantly, thereby killing himself later on. But had it been sponsored by a chewing gum company, they could have named the character Dentine instead of Bentine. And I think the sponsor would have been even happier. The thing about it is that it's really not a bad episode. not a great episode, but it's not bad. By season four standards, it's absolutely astonishing. There are lots of plot holes in here, but then what Twilight Zone episode doesn't have plot holes in it?
Enough to put a rocket ship through there, Bobby?
Yeah, pretty much. First of all, I'd like to know exactly what planet you land on that instantaneously has oxygen for people to breathe. That certainly is a rare event. Good luck trying to find that. You just step off the spaceship and there's air. Isn't that amazing? Because if there's oxygen there, there just may be some sort of life there, but apparently there wasn't. The people milling about, this whole group here, the ages of the actors is a little bizarre. Because if they've been there for 30 years, there should be a more representative ages. They all look like they're like in their 40s. Did they all go there in their, as teenagers? And Bentine mentions at one point that they had ages up to 60, but apparently we don't really see any of them. So it struck me as being a little odd that it was a representative group. Have to forgive me, I'm having a lot of trouble here. A representative group, but the ages didn't seem to really match up very well. It is a derivative episode, to put it mildly, but then they all are. And it's also derivative of an episode we haven't even reviewed yet. And that's the one that we just recently did at the group called The Old Man in the Cave, in which another man is taking over control of a group of people who survived nuclear war and lets it go to his head. That's coming up in season five. And it's very much like this, only in reverse. Also, I don't quite understand why they are so eager to go back. Because if they left in the first place because there were problems on Earth, war being one of them, nothing really has improved any. For instance, Sloan says, to when he's talking to Bentine, he says, oh, things are like this, things are like that, and, oh, there are still wars that pop up from time to time, but thankfully we managed to avoid the nuclear holocaust. Yeah, wars do pop up from time to time, like little things like Vietnam and Iraq and things like that. So I think they're going to be disappointed when they come back to find that the world is still the same. And if they left because they didn't like being threatened by nuclear war, nothing has changed there either. We're just as much danger now as we ever were. Nothing really has changed. So I'm afraid they're going to be a little disappointed. Also, I'd like to know exactly when they have that meeting and Bentine is telling them we'll all stay together, and they're all speaking up and saying, oh, I want to go here and I want to go there, we want to do farming and all that. Exactly how do they propose to do that? They're going to take the spaceship back to Earth, and they're going to walk off into what? They've got no money, they've got no jobs, they've got no place to live, they've got no shelter, they've got nothing. And I don't know how they propose to do that.
Well, I hope they have a welfare system there, Bobby.
Well, they better have it, because you couldn't leave New York to go to Chicago unless you had a place to live and some money on you. So I don't know how you go from another planet back to Earth and just go, yeah, we're going to farm. Okay, well, I hope you get a chance to buy the farm. So that seems a little idiotic to me that they all are just, you know, have these great plans. And I would think that Bentine would say to them, wait a minute, what are you talking about? You guys have nothing. You have absolutely nothing. What do you mean you're going to leave here? At least we're together here. Now you're going to go back there, and you're all going to starve to death. That's what I would have told them. I would have said, you know, you're crazy. Well, you have no support system. You got a support system here. It may be horrible here, but at least you have a support system, and you're going to leave this for that. But he never says any of that. Just kind of assume that they know what they're talking about, which they don't. So there are plot holes in it, but it's a pretty good episode. I thought James Whitmore was outstanding in this, and he pretty much carries the story, because he throws himself into it, and he's very sincere. And that, when you have a story that's not all that strong in logic, you have to have somebody come along to do a great acting job to sell it, and he really does. I would have to disagree with Lynn about the ending. I did not like the ending. Not that it hurt the episode any. It really doesn't. But I thought it was unrealistic at the end to have him suddenly have a change of heart within about 30 seconds and go out there and start saying, oh, don't leave me here, I want to come with you. That's ridiculous. What I would have done, far be it from me to tell Rod Serling how to write, but what I would have done is have him stay back and be delusional and still be talking to the group as if it was still there.
Yeah.
And
talking
having
to the rocks.
Having the scene just fade out and with the knowledge that he's completely lost his mind now. And not only is he alone, but he actually thinks they're still there. That has more meaning. It's like Time Enough at Last, not to compare the two together, but at Time Enough at Last, if Henry Bemis at the end had been had all those books and been sitting there reading and been happy to be alone, wouldn't nearly have had the impact that it has the way it is, because it's a tragic ending. He's got it, but he doesn't. And that same thing should have been carried over here. You know, not only did they abandon him, but he doesn't even realize it. He's just still standing there preaching to nobody. So I thought that hurt it a little bit. I was disappointed in that, because when it came to the end, I thought that's the way it was going to end, that he was just going to keep on, because for a few minutes there, he's still talking to people who aren't there, and, you know, just fade out, fade the scene out, just let it go. And Serling comes on and says something about him being there, only he doesn't realize that he's got nobody to lead anymore. One other thing Robert always mentions, comparing Twilight Zone episodes to episodes from other TV series and movies and things like that, but actually this episode should be compared to a real-life incident, not a movie or a TV series. You don't hear about this anymore because it's been too many years, but it certainly was in the news back around 1978, and that's Jonestown and the Reverend Jim Jones. It's the same story, basically. Here's a man who told everybody the end of the world was coming, there was going to be nuclear war, and the only way to escape it was to go with him and start this commune where they were going to be the only survivors. And as it turned out, of course, he was just like Ben Teen. He simply wanted to control everybody, and he did. And once they got there, he was controlling everything, and he was completely corrupt. And eventually, they all, most of them, if not all, I think all of them, committed suicide, including him. So this is, to me, very interesting. Some Twilight Zone episodes predict the future, and this one actually did. This really did happen. He didn't have to leave the planet for this to happen, but, you know, Jim Jones did the same thing. You know, he got them there, and then he was the ruler, and that's it. And he simply told everybody, either come with me or you're dead, which is pretty much what this group did. They went with Ben Teen, and they lived to regret it. So I found that most interesting about it. I gave it a 3 rating. I think it's a good story. It's not a great story, but it's a pretty good story. And I especially like the title, On Thursday We Leave for Home. Not that the title itself is so great, but it really, I can really relate to that title, because at the end of the show on Saturday, February 15th, we also leave for home when we complete the last episode, thank God, of season 4 and head for season 5. So I can certainly relate to that. On Saturday, February 15th, we finally, thank you, dear Lord, leave for home. And unlike Ben Teen, you won't have to beg me to come with you. I'll happily go along. Lynn?
Okay. And now Dave.
Well, quite a lot of things. Just to remind people, season 4, as we said, episode 118.
Oh, Dave, one thing.
Yeah?
I'm sorry. Bobby, what did you rate this?
3.
3. Oh, gave it a rating. 3, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, Dave.
No, it's okay. Aired 2nd of May, 1963. I did think it was overlong, but I actually enjoyed it as an episode. And a few of the things that have been mentioned, some I agree with, some I have my own thoughts on. By the way, I think the clip that Robert played right in the beginning, of course, was the Indomitable bit, was from the Fourth Doctor, Ark in Space.
Ark in
that
Space,
was,
yep.
Yeah. If it's going to remind me of a film, this reminded me of This Island Earth, where there were two races where the one world was being bombarded by directed meteorites, and they were using those as weapons. So it made me think about that. And of course, I do agree that, you know, that there was yet again the reuse of the, you know, the props from Forbidden Planet and the uniforms and so on. I suppose that's the only way they could even, because I mean, if you looked at the little hovels that they lived in and the little the radio antenna station they had, I mean, they were very, very sparsely done, and the costumes looked as though they'd been all done out of cotton. You know, I mean, they're obviously really in a bit of a bind in terms of the costs. Let me just mention a couple of things that have been mentioned already. I think they would have been fine getting back to Earth, Because it was already explained, they would be famous. I don't think they would want for anything. I think they would be granted a piece of land to have a farm if they wanted it, because they would be so famous. And think of all the doctors that would, you know, 30 years on another world, you know, the amount of information that would be gleaned, you know, from their survival. I did think the ages were well represented. In fact, when he said, you know, something from the young boy to 60, I thought he was a bit underestimating, because some of those people, because of the hardship, looked up more than 60 to me, and I'm talking as a man who's in my 60s myself. So I thought there was a range of those people. The other thing is, I think that as the leader, you know, he kept them together by force of will, and I think, like you say about them wanting it, why would they want to go back to Earth when they knew about wars? Well, the point is, increasingly as the years have gone on, he'd had to tell ever more fanciful tales of Earth. He had to describe, you know, the running cold ice water, the beautiful green valleys. He'd had to do that to keep their spirits up, to the point whereby which that they were seeing, you know, almost as Earth as going back to the promised land. And he was, you know, not at first you thought he was convinced the way he was giving these eloquent lines. And of course, it was only, as it was said at the end, when he thought he was going to lose his parish. He was using his
flock. Congregation.
It was only then that he had to sort of say these other things. And one of the things that I've got a couple of small clips, if I may play them, Lynn. These are from one Doctor Who episode called Gridlock, with the David Tennant playing the 10th Doctor. And it's from the beginning and the end, and it's to do with the planet that the Doctor comes from. And in each of these two cases, he's describing the planet. And when I listened to this man describing Earth, it reminded me of these two. So it just shows how evocative such speeches can be. Even if you're not a follower of Doctor Who, I think you might be able to just enjoy the way the actor just makes paints a picture, as it were. So what they're both about a minute long. So I'll play the one that's near the beginning of the episode called Gridlock.
How about a different planet?
Can we go to yours?
There's plenty of other places.
Oh, come on, no. I mean, Planet of the Time Lords. That's got to be worth a look. What's it like?
Well, it's beautiful, yeah.
Is it like, you know, outer space cities, all spires and stuff?
I suppose it is.
Great big temples and cathedrals.
Yeah.
Lots of planets in the sky.
Sky's burnt orange. With a citadel enclosed in a mighty glass dome. Shining under the twin suns. Beyond that, the mountains go on forever. Slopes of deep red grass, capped with snow.
Can we go there?
Nah, where's the fun for me? I don't want to go home. Stay. Much better.
And of course, the twin sons are mentioned there, and here's the clip right towards the end of the same episode.
They're all gone now. My family. My friend. Even that sky.
Oh, you should have seen it, that old planet. Second sun would rise in the south and the mountains would shine. The leaves on the trees were silver. When they caught the light every morning, it looked like a forest on fire. When the autumn came, breathe, blow through the branches like a song.
So you can see the power of those words would have been used to the point where these people, you know, wanted to see Earth again. Some of them, the memories have faded. Others had been born, perhaps during the flight. Because this spaceship that came to rescue them had taken, I think, 4.5 months to get to them. But they travelled 30 years before. Maybe it's taken their ship 3 or 4 years to get there, you know what I mean? So we don't know that. And also, the other thing is that they may have also, remember, they'd received a message that a spaceship was on its way a month before. So the very fact that, you know, 30 years had gone by, that civilization was still able to send the ship to help them out, maybe they took that as a signal to mean that the troubles were over, as it were, and that the world had survived the coming apocalypse that they had feared, and that therefore it would be a better place for them to go. So those were those things. There were some off points. I mean, I thought it was strange first of all, about that halfway point, you know, I thought, well, he's obviously going to try and sabotage the ship. But the last thing I thought, it was going to be hitting a bloody stanchion outside the ship, one of its legs. I mean, why didn't he go up the blooming stairs and start wrecking havoc with one of the, you know, the control systems or something?
Just trying to bang on the legs.
He found the thickest metal piece he could and tried to hit on that. I mean, you know, what that was going to do, goodness knows me.
He pretty much lost his mind during that time anyway, so anything.
Yeah. Let me just think that, by the way, I thought that cave reminded me of that, the past episode we had where, you know, those robbers had stolen money and they went into a cave and then went into
Suspended animation.
Oh, Rip Van Winkle.
Yeah, I thought that was the same cave they used that. I thought the ending was a little bit weak, really. I thought it could have been a stronger ending, Bobby. I think what would have been better is that the ship would have taken off, and then as he's talking to that rock, almost the ghosts of these people would appear. Now, I don't mean that in the sense that there would be ghosts, but simply, you know, he hadn't got a flock. He'd create a flock in his mind, and as like Bobby said, basically, it would be the clear signal that he had at this point now, you know, lost his mind. You know, he's lost his reason to live, he's lost his mind, and so on and so forth. So I think that might have been a better way. So I think it was stretched out a little bit too long. I thought it could have been brought to a more timely end. But I loved the acting. I thought the both captains played a good part. Both the actors who played captains played a good part. Like the way he described things, it was evocative, as I say, of things like This Island Earth and that Doctor Who episode, and as Robert played the Ark in Space. So I think I'll give it a 3 out of 5. I think I would have given it more if it had been shorter, because I like space exploration, I like time travel stories. To me, this is the sort of thing that Twilight Zone should be doing. And it was just a little elongated, the resolution. I think most of us could see what was going to happen at the halfway point, and that could have been done, condensed down in about 5 minutes. Although I agree, the way they ended it, it was strange that, you know, he changed his mind within 5 minutes of the ship taking off. It would have been far better for him to have retreated, I think, into his own mind and obviously, you know, basically just come away from the planet, seeing him basically going to a world of his own, and basically there was no way he could face going back to Earth. So that's my thoughts, but I did enjoy it, 3 out of 5.
Oh, Dave, something else we should mention too, Tim O'Connor appears in a sci-fi series years later called Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he played the old man in the...
The administrator.
Yeah.
And he has an acting son, I think, James Whitmore Jr., who was in lots of things like Dark Angel and Quantum Leap and Roswell and Star Trek Enterprise. So, he's acting, I say his son, he's still alive, age 65. And in fact, James Whitmore is still alive, I think. And James Whitmore is 87.
Is he still alive? Oh, I didn't know he was still alive.
No, he's not. No, I checked earlier today.
Oh, he did die?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, last thing I remember him in is Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I fell alive. 2009, you're right. Yeah. It's the other actor who's still alive, is it? It's that Tim O'Connor is still alive. He's
86. Yeah, that's what Robert was talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Lou?
Hi, Lynn. How are you?
Hi.
Okay, I kind of agree with Robert, I think. This is primarily a character study of Captain Benteen. And it's also kind of like what Bobby said. I mean, basically, he's become the leader of this cult on this planet. It's kind of an exploration of how he became this leader and why he's this leader. And like after 30 years, the cracks that start forming in this cult, because you have James Broderick's character. He's the one who's always questioning a lot of the decisions that he makes as it goes on. I mean, actually it was an impressive dramatic scene where there's the suicide of that lady. So that's already one sign that people aren't all in favor with Captain Benteen. And then I think it's James Broderick's character, right, who gives the speech about, or the response about how she chose how to end her life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, if anything, then of course, then James Whitmore's character comes back with the idea of how we need structure to survive, and he even gets them all to chant after him about believing that the spaceship will return. He gets them all to chant after him. That being said, I mean, you know, I'm also with Robert. I mean, to a certain degree, this is a great character study of how a leader might rise and end up deifying himself, and then how that, you know, the fall of that. But, you know, as a Twilight Zone episode, when you think of Twilight Zone, you think sometimes...
Twilight
Zone-y,
yeah.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't have any, it feels very, the story's told very straight, I think. There's nothing, outside of the science fiction aspect of it, there's nothing really, like, supernatural, or even the twist ending isn't really that strong. I actually do like the ending. I think I prefer the tragic ending, only because if he kept believing that he was leading these group of people, it would have been just kind of like, well, he's just crazy and he's mad. And
we could have had a changing of the guards where, you know, the people would appear. Maybe the people that are gone from the planet would appear in like a ghostly figure.
I still think that means that he's just still visualizing. I mean, if anything, in some ways, the ending, I think, for me, it kind of makes it seem like he had this. It's kind of like, I agree with Bobby in that he shouldn't. I don't think of it as a change of heart. I think of it as kind of an ambivalence of the choice that he made. It's kind of like, wait a minute, this is the choice he made, but is it really the right choice? I mean, at the end, he says, I want to come home. And it's kind of like he's kind of questioning his own belief about the life he led on the planet compared to the life that he had at home. And, you know, I mean, this is one of those old science fiction plot elements about, you know, like utopia versus real life. You know, in utopia, you always seem to give up certain kinds of freedoms. But if you want to live in the real world, or if you want to live a truly fulfilling life, there's going to be strife, there's going to be trouble, there'll be hatred and pain. We all have to strive to overcome those things in order to progress. I mean, Colonel Sloan, the Tim O'Connor character, he mentions how the reason why everything's so great on the planet is because you're living in a test tube. There's nothing here to challenge you. You're all just stagnant. And, you know, and then he gives that speech at the end about how, you know, if you come to Earth, the one thing you will have is the choice to do whatever you want. And it's the idea that there's something appealing about that. So, you know, sure, it comes with war and it comes with death and it comes with hatred and prejudice. But the idea that you're an individual is so much more important than being, you know, sheep, being led by a leader into a safe existence.
Yeah.
So, you know, but like I said, it's not Twilight Zone-y like Robert says. And this is kind of a science fiction plot element that's been told lots of times. It's been done a lot of times in Star Trek. I mean, Kirk was always like,
yeah, but those are after. You can't blame them for doing it first. You can only blame the others for copying them.
You're absolutely right. But I'm just saying, for Twilight Zone, I mean, but I think it was done before then, too. I mean, I think it was just a very popular kind of idea that was out there. I think Rod Serling wrote a good story. I just, you know, this is just, it doesn't stand out in all of the other ones that have come out before it or after it. It's not Twilight Zone-y like Robert said. I mean, I think it's a great episode. I think James Whitmore gives a great performance. I think Tim Connor gives a great performance. And you know, I just felt it just didn't, outside of the performances, there was nothing else about it that stood out. I think it's a good episode. I just think that this is an episode that you could have easily written it for any other science fiction anthology show, and it would have easily fit in. So, you know, for that, you know, my rating would be 2.5. I think I think it's a really good story. I think Rod Serling wrote, you know, good dialogue and a good story. It wasn't an overwhelming piece. It just didn't stick out for me to give it anything higher than that.
Now, see, now I agree with you on the ending. I really had no problem with the ending because I don't think it was that. I mean, I know that Dave and Bobby said, you know, he changed his mind in 30 seconds. But, you know, sometimes that happens. I mean, you think, you know, it's almost like, ha ha, I'll show you, you know, I'm going to, you know, do this. I'm going to stay here. And you start talking to yourself. You start talking to the people as if they're still there. And then all of a sudden, like a lightning bolt, it's like, wait a minute. You know, I'm going to be alone here. Oh my God, you know, I have to go catch that rocket ship. I can't stay here by myself. And in that, you know, in that 30 seconds, it could happen where you just have that, you know, momentary lightning bolt of reality that sets in and says, oh my God, what am I doing? And you run out. So I don't think the ending was bad at all. I liked the way it ended. And now you see that he's done. He's finished. You know, he's going to die there on that planet alone. And I actually liked the ending very much.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The lightning bolt was literally the engines of the spaceship taking off, and it's kind of like that was the switch.
Yeah, that was it. You know, he heard them going. Maybe he thought that, oh, they're going to come back, for, you know, back in and try to convince me to go. But he heard that ship leaving, and that, I think, is where the reality set in. That,
yeah.
That's it. That's the, I'm here alone. My people are gone. Everyone's gone. And now I will die here. And he ran out after the ship, and it was too late. So
yeah. Well, maybe he should have done like the lonely, just left him a robot.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that would have worked. So my question is still, though, what were they eating? I want to know what they were eating.
Well, didn't they mention that they were farming? I mean, didn't the...
On a desert planet, though. That's what kept me. They were on
well,
the
he
planet.
Was saying
water.
That on Earth it'll be much easier to farm. The Earth, you know, the Earth there is more giving. Here, I guess it was a real struggle for them to farm.
Well, I don't know what he's going to do, but he was going to die there, that's for sure. Okay, well, so we've got it kind of across the board. We've got Robert, you gave it 1 or 2?
I gave it a 2. I bumped it up from 1.5 to 2.
Oh, okay. So 2.
I think we're giving it similar scores, but for different reasons.
Yeah, that's true, too. So we got
and
two,
it's
two
like
and
what
half,
Bobby,
four.
Like what Bobby brought up. It, I mean, it's like season 5, Old Man in the Cave. I brought that up, too, in a review this week we did of that episode.
It's and I still think it's worthy.
Instead of outer space and in a planet, nuclear holocaust on Earth, so it's the same.
And I still think
They did that episode, The Little People, didn't they, where they had the spacemen.
That's what I said, yeah. It's still, to me, it's very reminiscent of that episode because, again, you have a guy that stays behind. You know, Claude Akins, his partner, says, you know, I'm leaving. I'm leaving without you. You either come or I'm leaving you here. And he says, I'm staying. I'm going to be the god of all these little people. And he left him, he went and left him by himself, and then he ended up dying anyway. But, it reminds me very much of that.
As they say in the Star Wars movie, there's always a bigger fish.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say that I kind of agree with Dave to a certain degree about like this episode preceding, or the story of this episode preceding stories that have been told before, and I think something that's a really hard way to review things when you've seen it later on, then another show comes on that tells the story. I remember I saw The Manchurian Candidate, and I was thinking, like, wow, this movie is really derivative. Then I realized every film that I was thinking that it was derivative actually had come after it. So it was a strange experience for me to watch this movie and think, like, wow, I've seen this before. But then I realized everything that I'm thinking about that was derivative in that film was actually done after.
Afterward.
But then my response to the film is a bit kind of... I'd seen this done before, even though chronologically it hadn't been done earlier or later. So it's hard to review something like that sometimes.
Well, we got to understand this is 1963. During that time, they didn't have things like repeats. People didn't have, if we viewed this at the first airing, we probably would have had a different opinion or outlook on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But being influenced by other things, you know, that's what you have
to
accept.
That's true. Okay. Well, we all gave our ratings, and Felix gave it a 4.5. And so that brings us to 2 more season 4
Yay.
Episodes. Woo-hoo! So on February 1st, Dave, we will be doing Passage on the Lady Anne. And after that, on February 15th, we will be doing The Bard.
I'm going to have so much fun with that episode, tearing that baby apart.
I got some
plans for that, too.
Oh, good. Great.
Plans among plans into plans.
We'll all have a good time that day.
Will Shakespeare. Pocahontas.
We'll all have a good time with that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that will bring us to February 1st, Passage on the Lady Anne. And I hope to see everybody there, including you, Felix. I want to see you there. And, Felix left. Oh, well, hopefully he'll show up. But I know Lou will be there, and hopefully Rick will be back. So I hope everyone else has a wonderful, wonderful weekend or what's remaining of it. And I'll see you all on February 1st for Lady Anne.
Bye.
Goodbye. And
bye.
We'll go out with the next episode that we'll review.
Okay.
Next on Twilight Zone, an exercise from the typewriter of Charles Beaumont, a sea voyage to the darker regions of the zone. Our stars in alphabetical order, Gladys Cooper, Wilfred Hyde White, Cecil Calloway, Lee Phillips, and Joyce Van Patten.
I'm prepared to pay you double the amount of your tickets if you'll abandon your plan.
Not a chance.
Mrs. Ranson, you're driving me to extremes. However, if you leave the Lady Anne now, I'll give you the equivalent of $5,000 American.
And I'll match that.
Making it a total of $10,000.
Ever since we picked this tub, people have been trying their best to discourage us. I don't know why. Forget it. And leave us alone.
Great news, great news. Very important. This is, we've been talking it over, Millie and old Burgess and the rest of us, and we've come to the conclusion that you won't have to leave the ship after all.
What my husband is trying to say is that you won't have to die after all.